Hey, everybody. Welcome to Blockbusting, the podcast where we love to hate movies. I'm your host, Jay Light. Joining me today, the illustrious Ricky Carmona.
Hello.
Hello.
I've never been called illustrious before. That's very exciting. Thank you.
Today is your day. very excited to have you on. I know you're a big-time movie cinephile, movie lover, movie hater. Currently writing on Mystery Science Theater 3000, which is a wonderful, it's tough to say, like, as I have done this podcast enough, like, hating movies shows you have to really love movies in order to, like, really hate them. So I'm sure that writing for a show that is explicitly making fun of movies is a great, very fun time.
Absolutely, dude. Like, you totally find out, like, oh man, I am shitting on this so much, but it's because, like, I would rather not be doing anything else than sitting, whether it's in a movie theater or, like, on your couch. Like, I would just, it's kind of the best. It really is. Yeah. Pretty goddamn great.
That's great. Have you been back to any movies in theaters yet since they started reopening?
Not yet. And the two, I just got two emails this week from, I don't live that far from the Egyptian Theater, which is here in Hollywood.
Oh yeah.
And they do, the Egyptian Theater is run by American Cinematheque. And
right.
They have, like when I first moved here, they do screenings of, like, classic movies. They have, like, current screenings. I saw Big Trouble in Little China there with John Carpenter. He did a Q&A when I first moved to LA, and I was like, "Is this Hollywood? Is this what happens here? Oh my god!
Oh man!"
But I just got an email from them. Two emails. One, they're doing a 70mm screening of Malcolm X.
Nice.
And another one in Santa Monica, they're doing I don't know if it's going to be 70mm or what, but they're doing Defending Your Life, the Albert Brooks joint.
Oh, great.
And those were two where I was like, ooh. And then Malcolm X sold out. And then Defending Your Life is like, I just bought it on Criterion. I literally just bought it on Criterion Collection. And it's like, if I hadn't bought it on Criterion, I might be willing to take the drive out to Santa Monica and watch Defending Your Life in a movie theater. I've never seen a movie theater. I just grew up watching that on HBO.
Yeah, but if you got to drive out to the Arrow, you might as well just hold off. You got a Criterion. You're good enough.
I drove out there to see King of Comedy, and that was fucking fantastic. That was nice. Great. They had, like, a really, like, cleaned up, like, 4K print of King of Comedy, and it was, like, on a Tuesday afternoon. I was like, I'll go fucking
oh great
King of Comedy on a Tuesday, goddamn right, hell yeah.
Nice.
It was fantastic. It was great. It was one of those, like, there was only, like, maybe 15-20 people in the theater, but everybody who was there was like, we love this goddamn movie so much.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I that's the kind of movie going I miss. I just saw my first movie back.
Oh shit!
I saw Stop Making Sense at the American Legion Theater.
That's a good one.
It was a 35mm print. It's definitely that kind of movie where it's like, it wasn't a full theater, but everybody who was there loved it. It felt like being at a live concert again. Everybody was bopping around.
Totally. That's a great, like, if you're gonna go back for your first movie, make it a concert experience, because mm-hmm. that's even more like, That's more communal than, like, seeing a movie. Usually if I go see a movie, like, once I sit down in the theater, like, I got the blinders on and I'm, like, focused on the screen. Mm-hmm. But, like, I remember seeing the, what was it? The LCD sound system documentary.
Oh yeah. Shut Up and Play, like, the Hits.
When that came out, like, I was looking at everybody, like, to my left and my right, like, this shit is hot. This shit is hot. Same thing with the Tribe Called Quest documentary. Tribe Called Quest documentary is the only time I've like put my hands up in the air like, oh shit. Like just fucking. So that's a good one. Good on you. That's what's up.
It was nice. And I'd, and you know, to a hard shift here, of course, I mentioned a movie you definitely were not putting your hands in the air like you just don't care during was, the movie we want to talk about today, which is Us.
Yes. Oh man.
So tell me about, you saw this in the theaters. Tell me about your experience, like watching it and immediately afterwards. What was that like for you?
I mean, there was like the buildup to it, you know, mm-hmm. like, and I just watched the trailer before we started recording here. And I watched both trailers. I watched the Super Bowl trailer and I watched just like the official trailer they released. And it's like, you couldn't help but just get hyped up about the fact like, oh man, this movie, oof, mm-hmm. oof, like I have no idea what it's about. Everything they're showing me, I still can't tell exactly what it's about, but it just feels like this shit is gonna be hot. And I'm a sucker for trailers still. I still fall for trailers hard. I like to go back and watch old trailers. Like when a trailer is done right, man, that's like a, I feel like that's part of like the experience. Like, oh man, we just got this appetizer and now we're about to get like, whoa, here we go. Yeah.
I feel like I still go back and watch like the Inception trailer once a year because that's one of those like all time great trailers for me.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Like that's a great one. And it kind of felt like my favorite kind of trailers. The Inception one is a good example. Like I love Paul Thomas Anderson trailers where they're just like giving you like a vibe of the movie, but they're not really like telling you what the movie is about, you know? So then I go see the movie and I'm sitting there and like, you know, you see enough trailers, you start to kind of like try and play like movie detective. So I'm just like watching this movie the whole time from the get-go. The opening of the movie is like the, like that opening, like text scrawl. That's like giving you a history of these tunnels.
Oh, the tunnels.
Yeah. And I was like, okay. I had like the same reaction to that opening scrawl when I went to go see Unbreakable, which is another second movie by a director who's all hyped up. Mm-hmm. But I ended up loving Unbreakable and I love Unbreakable to this day. So I'm like, the scrawl comes out and I'm like, okay, all right. So we're going to be dealing with underground tunnels here. Okay. Okay. And then it cuts to like the next scene, which is like some TV and like a Hands Across America commercial. And I'm like, oh, okay. So we're in the 80s. All right. Okay. And then like for the first, I want to say 40 minutes of the movie, every time a new scene started, I was like, okay, this is what the movie is about. This movie is about this. Now it's about this little girl who is going downstairs, but okay, no. Now we're back in the present. So it's not about like, I was doing so much like mental detective work to try and figure out what the hell I was watching and not just being able to enjoy the movie.
Yeah.
And then when I do go back and try and figure out, hey, what the hell is this movie about? Like, I just don't know what is going on here. And I mean, in a way, we do know what is going on. This movie might give us too many answers. Mm-hmm. Like, there's an explanation for pretty much everything.
Yes.
But man, if I am not just like, huh? Wait, what?
It's one of those where it almost, especially upon rewatching it, where it feels like you're seeing the process of the screenwriting that Jordan Peele must have gone through where he's like drawing the lines and connecting every single piece possible so that way the puzzle box is fully formed and everything is solved. But it's too, the puzzle's too big and there's too many pieces. Like, this is like a 1,000-piece puzzle. It should have been like a 500-piece puzzle.
I feel like it's a 1,000-piece puzzle and you put those pieces down and then the next day you get another box in the mail that's like, hey, here's 1,000 more pieces. you've still got more work to do. And it's like, I just spent all that time.
Yeah.
What are you talking about? And that, it's almost like unfair how much I don't like this movie. It's like I said, the trailer just gets you so hyped.
It does.
And Get Out is like so other level.
Mm-hmm. It looms
that
large.
You just kind of feel like, yes.
Yeah, so you come in and you're doing homework the whole movie, which is not the most enjoyable
really
experience.
Are, dude.
Yeah. I like rewatching this. I was like dissecting symbols because I remember after I watched it for the first time, I was like, all right, cool. Yeah, this is really heady, man. There's a lot going on. This is just saying some stuff. And then I rewatched it and I remember reading about like all these articles that were like, this is what every single frame of us, this is how every single piece represents a thing and is an homage. And then I rewatched it and I was like, this is exhausting to like catalog all of this. Why would is that enjoying the movie? I don't think so.
There's a part of me that enjoys watching stuff like that. And I don't know if it's because Us is a movie and that kind of like research and, you know, watching every frame, you have to do all of that and it's truncated down to like 2 hours,
mm-hmm.
You know, like I love Lost. Lost is like one of my favorite shows. But if you were to like to try and like explain to somebody like what Lost is about, you know, after a while, you're just like, yo, oh, hey, all right, okay, and then relax. All this right. Can't be connected and can't have happened. But you have, like, you know, Lost is like 7 seasons. You have like 7 seasons of that to like go through and like process things.
Mm-hmm.
And Us, you're just so, your brain is working so hard to try and, you know, figure out what's going on, and things are presented in this kind of like, you know, mystery fashion,
mm-hmm.
that it's like, oh man, this is a lot of work for shit that I am not understanding right now.
Uh-huh.
It's kind of like I'll watch like a, it takes me probably like 3 viewings of a Paul Thomas Anderson movie for me to be like, hey, you know what? I like that. That was all right. That was okay. I'm on board with that one. I knew, you know, that one, it went over my head the first time, but I'm the second time I started like piece things together.
I feel ya.
With this one, with Us, just pretty early on, I was like, don't understand that. Wait, now where? What?
Well, especially because some of the ideas that get presented, There's some stuff that I, upon rewatching it, I still was like, okay, this is cool. Like, there's definitely some well-executed parts. But the thing that really stuck out to me is, like, there's not enough time in this movie to explain this aspect and make it make sense, is everything related to the tunnels and the copies and the actual tethered people.
Yeah. It's... I still don't get it. I still don't understand it. I would have preferred, this is one of those movies where like, I would have preferred less answers.
Yeah, same. Like,
let me fill in the blanks because I'm not going to tell myself I'm wrong. I'm going to be like, damn, if that's mm-hmm. what he's trying to say, that's fucked up, dog.
Mm-hmm.
But instead, it's like, no, there's rabbits here and we keep them in cages and we feed these rabbits to the people who are trapped here, mm-hmm. you know? And it's like, what are you showing me rabbits for, man? I don't understand this.
There's just like, I remember I was reading right before one of the only negative critical reviews of Us is from Stephanie Zacharek in Time, who says, you know, Peele goes even deeper into the conflicted territory of class and race and privilege. He also ponders the traits that make us most human. But this time he's got so many ideas, he can barely corral them, let alone connect them. He overthinks himself into a corner and we're stuck there with him. And the first time I watched the movie, I didn't really feel that because I think I was just so flooded with info that I was just like, wow, that was like, he put it all together. That's crazy. And then watching it again now, I was like, I think I would have liked to have not had everything be so straightforward. Like Get Out is a very straightforward movie compared to Us. I think it works better as streamlined as it is. Whereas Us, you can't really streamline it. There's so much going on. You've got to, there is no stream. It's a ocean.
Yeah, it really is. And you just kind of want to like pull everything back, or you want him to like pull everything back.
Mm-hmm.
I think I almost would have preferred if this whole movie was just kind of like some insane horror home invasion story.
Yes.
If it's just them stuck in this house, and then their doppelgangers show up, and then we just spend the next 24 hours or however long this night lasts mm-hmm. to like see what happens to them. But like, I remember when you know, we leave Lupita Nyong'o and Winston Duke's house, we leave that family, and we go to Tim Heidecker and Elizabeth Moss, and then there's the reveal that they have doppelgangers, that they right. have evil versions of themselves. And I was just like, where'd they come from? My first reaction was actually like, okay, dope, cool. I was not expecting this.
Uh-huh.
But then you just start asking questions. We're like, where did they come from? How did they know how to get there? Like, it fucking streamline all that shit down, son. Streamline yeah. it all down.
And it's such a, because I agree with you like halfway on that. Like, I think the thing that's holding me up from fully agreeing on that element is that I love Tim Heidecker and Elizabeth Moss's performances as the doppelgangers, even not even close to more than their regular characters. But I guess you're supposed to hate their regular characters.
Yeah.
They're really shitty people who are in an obviously bad marriage. But their doppelganger performances are so much fun.
Absolutely. No, you're 100% right. You're 100% right. Like, when those things show up, it's so awesome. It's so mm-hmm. like, wait, what is happening now? But it just, I it just doesn't make sense.
Mm-hmm.
Like, what are they doing here?
Yeah. And then you have to get this explanation out somehow. That is what the third act of the movie is, all this explaining this tunnels thing. And it's so much. It really is like, I mean, the way you brought up Lost, it's like, this is definitely something that I would have seen a J.J. Abrams try and do. And you could probably figure out a way, or Damon Lindelof or whoever, to try and make this work for a bunch of seasons. But in like the 45 minutes total that we get that explains all of the aspects of the tunnels, it's just not enough.
No, it's
disappointingly not enough, because you either have to have less or six seasons worth.
This feels like, the movie feels like a bad sequel to like a first movie that we never got, that the first movie was probably great. Mm-hmm. Like if we would have never found out where the tethered came from, if we would have never found out that there's like tunnels underground, if it, like if these things just kind of like pop up and we experience them in the same time as the characters do, I'd be like, damn, this is fucking crazy.
Yes. But then, it could have been just a movie called We that was about just the doppelgangers, and then you get us eventually years later.
Because, like, you know, I've read like interviews with Jordan Peele where he's said like, you know, this movie is about like, I wanted to show like the reflection between like, you know, ourselves and holding up a mirror to ourselves and the haves and the have-nots. Boom, you have my, you know, here's my money. That's mm-hmm. that's a great concept. Boom, I'm all in. But it felt kind of like, it felt kind of like the sequel to The Matrix, which I don't hate as much as this movie. But the sequel to The Matrix is parts of that movie where I'm like, why are you explaining all of this to me when I just want to see Neo and Trinity whooping that ass right now?
Yeah.
That's what I'm here for, dog.
I don't want to have to look up Bible verses after a movie to see what they mean.
That is one of my pet peeves, man, is in any movie when somebody holds up a Bible verse.
Yes.
And then nobody in the movie like refers to like what the verse is. So it's just like the director telling you like, oh, no, you know, Jeremiah 11:11. No, I don't, man. Like I have, but now, you know, I don't go to church, but now you want me to go find a Bible and you want me to go like find.
Right. And it's got to be the specific, you can't do like the King James version. It has to be the NIV or else the quote doesn't make sense. Come on, dude. Like I don't have time for that.
That's a lot of work, dude. That's a lot of work.
I like movies where I get to, where I feel something, where I'm drawn to an emotion. And I don't necessarily have to question why I feel that way. Mm-hmm. And us, instead of doing that this time around, it got me most of the way there. But then I was just, and I think part of it too, and I am curious about this because you mentioned not being able to rewatch it. And I think part of why I wasn't able to get there is rewatching it now, I don't have the surprise of finding out that Lupita Nyong'o's character is her reversed, her tethered self. And I don't have that element of surprise anymore. And so then the whole time I'm watching it through this frame of reference where I'm just like, I'm in the doing homework mode instead of allowing and being able to just experience the thing.
Yes.
But you had that experience the very first time you watched it, and then you couldn't even get through a rewatch.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, there are movies that I don't enjoy that I can like rewatch and be like, oh, this is still, I'm going to find the goods in here. Like I had initially wanted to do Prometheus on this show. Cause it's like, there's another perfect example of like, man, why are you giving me all these answers to questions I didn't ask? And it just doesn't make sense. But visually, I am all in on Prometheus.
Right.
Like one of the best shot movies I've seen in the last like 10 years.
It's gorgeous.
And to Us's credit, Us was shot by the guy who did the guy who shot the movie It Follows.
Yes,
which I don't know if you've seen It Follows.
I love It Follows. Another beautifully shot movie, and also a movie that leaves enough open ended that you're like, what's gonna happen next?
Absolutely, and it's crazy that the rules in It Follows are simpler and make more sense than they do in Us, you know? Like, I don't know that people, it's kind of like when, you know, it's kind of like when a movie, you don't need to show them the most, you don't need to show the audience like the most graphic thing. They will, they can fill it in for themselves. We will make it worse than, you know, whatever David Fincher wants to show us.
Right.
And he's going to show us some horrible ass shit.
Oh yeah.
You know, but here it's just like, man, I just remember being like so salty and just like, what?
Mm-hmm. Huh? There's
what?
And you saw it. I know you also mentioned that you saw it with your girlfriend and a couple friends.
Yeah.
And you and your friends hated it. And immediately out of the gate, were like, that movie was awful. And then your girlfriend quietly was like, oh, I was really excited to talk about that.
Yeah.
Really,
oh yeah. Like we're like sitting in the theater and then like, you know, credits roll, we're getting ready to leave. And it's that moment where like everybody will like lean forward and look over at each other. Like, that was, and myself and two other friends, we all looked at each other like, that was a hot mess. And my girl looked over like, I loved it. Like, oh. And we just, it was just confusion that was on our faces, you know, because, you know, we walked out of the theater and we don't want to, you know, you don't want to talk about a movie like that.
Mm-hmm.
Right when you walk out. And we were just like, man, I don't know what the hell just happened in that movie. I don't, like, it was just...
Did she try and come back and banter with you guys about it? Or was she just... Because I've been that person in situations before, and I just shut the fuck up because I can't even, like... I don't want to be the person who's trying to defend the thing that everybody hates.
When I did the rewatch before the show here, she watched it with me and still enjoys it.
Mm-hmm.
But is able to admit, like, oh yeah, this is, there's a lot of movie in here and it doesn't all connect.
Right.
It does not all connect. Yeah. Oof, man.
Another thing I actually have, we have sort of a similar mind on this, I think, but we have different variations of it. This movie does something, and the trailer also does something too that is later replicated in the movie, where it takes a song that everybody knows and flips it into a way where it is used in a way that is super dissonant and creates this effect, for better or for worse. Now, I think I feel this way about the way they did I Got Five on It. And not because of the way they used it in the movie, but because it started this trend across all these other horror trailers where they're like taking a song and like pitching it down and putting in some like minor chords.
Oh yeah.
And I'm just like, come on, you guys, like the Us trailer really set the bar and you guys are just bonking your heads on it, trying to keep clearing it. Just stop.
It really is. I feel like Us, the way to use I Got Five on It, and then there's another movie. I was just saying David Fincher earlier. The Social Network, they use in that trailer, I think it's like a kid's choir, and they're all singing Creep. They're doing like Radiohead, right?
Yeah.
I'm all for that. Mm-hmm. I love that kind of like, oh, this is, you know, a little creepy.
Mm-hmm.
And no pun intended there. But what I'm done with, what drove me crazy is I'm done with scenes in movies where you are like watching just something horrible happen on screen, like a whole family getting murdered by their doppelgangers. And then the Beach Boys is playing in the background.
Right.
And it's like, come on, man. You don't think I saw this in the X-Files? The X-Files did it the best.
I've never seen the X-Files. What do they do?
There's a great episode of the X-Files. It's like the fourth season. And it's about this family that is, I'm trying to speak in non-spoilery terms here, because I highly recommend that you go back and watch this this episode. The episode's called Home. The episode's called Home, and it's about this family, these three brothers, and they are going around murdering people who live in this town, but they always play like the same record before they do it, or they'll play like the song. They drive like an old school, like 60s Cadillac, and it plays like, I don't even remember if it's like a Frankie Valli song, but it's just one of those songs where, like, you know, when you hear it on its own, you're like, hey man, you know what? I'd love a glass of lemonade right now.
Okay. Yeah, sure.
But when you watch it in, like, you know, against what's happening on screen, you're like, I never want to hear this song again for the rest of my life. Like, this shit is terrifying. And like, my man uses a Beach Boys song, and then it cuts to Fuck the Police.
Right. And it's all joke all the time. And it's just, it's so obvious of like, ah, you see, you catch this wink? You see this other homage that I did?
I feel like he's waiting for the high five on there. And I'm like, bro, I am not giving you the high five.
Gotta leave him hanging on that one.
Oh, man. And, oh, and another thing that the movie does that drives me crazy is, if you're gonna, in the trailer, one of my pet peeves is when they have in the trailer, the moment that sells you on the movie in the trailer isn't the scene, isn't the take that they use in the movie.
Yes, this is, they have a really egregious version of this.
Dude, like, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie. There's a movie from the late 90s called City Hall. Starring, it stars Al Pacino and John Cusack. Al Pacino plays the mayor of New York City. And you can, you know, from the trailer, you can tell, like, oh, man, this is going to be, like, a political, like, sprawling epic about the backstabbing that happens in New York government. Okay. And there's, you know, it's Pacino in the late 90s, so he's got some fucking speeches that are great. Ooh, and at one point, he's like at a funeral, and he tells every, you know, all the people at this funeral, like, what New York is and what we can be, and I choose to fight back. And I'm like, I have to see this movie, because I have to hear him tell the people in this funeral home that we choose to fight back. Go see the movie. And he's like, and that's why I choose to fight back. Bruh, that's not how you said it in the trailer. What are you doing right now?
That's not the yelling Al Pacino that you were promised.
Man, like, find me the projectionist right now. Find me the editor. Somebody, like, mail us the clip of what I got in the trailer. My favorite part in that trailer is when Winston Duke is walking out with the bat, and he's saying to whoever's out there in the darkness, like, you want to get crazy? We can get crazy. Me and my girl would see that trailer and get hyped up about it. Like, I was like, man, this shit is going to be so dope.
Great.
Cut to us in the theater, and my man says, you want to get crazy? We can get crazy. I'm pretty sure we both looked at each other like, nah, man.
Yeah.
It's
like when you're feeling up to it.
It's like when you buy an album by your favorite band, and then you go see them in concert, and they're like, hey, we're going to do like a different version of it. No, man, I don't want you to do a different version of it. I want you to play it exactly how you played it on the record.
Right.
And they just don't give us that.
Yeah. Oh. It's just, I really wanted to have watched this movie and like stick up for it and argue with you more on it. But that's the thing. It's like watching it, I'm taken aback, because I'm like, oh, there is a lot of, like, I still think there's stuff that I can appreciate, and there's stuff that's well shot, but I'm just like, yeah, Ricky's really onto something here. There's just there's too much movie. It's just not quite. It's not. It is what it is.
I've always felt that after this movie, a lot of like white people, they turned into like Bradley Whitford in Get Out.
Yeah.
Where he tells Daniel Kaluuya, like, hey, you know, I would have voted for Obama a third time. Mm-hmm. Like, I had a lot of white people being like, oh, man. I saw them tweeting like, oh, man, I love this movie. I thought it was so great. And then when I would talk to them in person and be like, man, I thought it was awful. They'd be like, oh, thank you for saying that. Thank you for saying that, because I thought it was as well. Well, fucking speak on it, son. Speak on it.
Man. See, now we're far enough removed. We can. And we don't have to feel like we've secretly become Bradley Whitford from Us or from Get Out. Man, it's just, you know, I'm intrigued to see what Jordan Peele does next as a director. I know he's got a lot of stuff that he's producing right now. We got that Candyman remake, or not remake, but like spiritual sequel, whatever, coming out soon. He's got some other projects, but I do hope whatever he comes out with next is just, it's more streamlined. You can make a great movie and not have to put three other movies worth of material in there.
I also agree. And I also think like we need to like let him like have a career as mm-hmm. well. Like we don't need to dissect every frame in his movie.
Right.
I don't want him to think that his, you know, he needs to present, you know, I don't want him to get caught in the J.J. Abrams mystery box trap yeah. where like we need to do all this work to like figure it out. I'm as much as I don't like Us, I am so hyped for whatever he's doing, whatever his next movie is going to be.
Yeah.
I do feel like in the Latino community, you know, I always have to be careful when I say I'm not crazy about Lin-Manuel Miranda. You know, it's like, hey, like respect to Hamilton, not my thing. Woo-woo. And I feel kind of the same way about Jordan and like Us. Like, hey, I love dude. That one was just not my thing. And yeah. I drank a little bit of Haterade, but I'm not chugging the Haterade on in. Mm-hmm. Like,
I think we got to allow people to have misfires. And yes. I think we got to allow people to give somebody enough of the benefit of the doubt that we don't have to, that they don't have to, as the creator, have to throw in every single reference possible for every single film and TV blogging site to write five different articles about.
Dude, can you imagine like how awful it would have been if Twitter was around when like 2001 was released?
Oh, it would have been like insufferable.
And I don't know when I gave up trying to like figure out what happens in the last 20 minutes of 2000. Mm-hmm. Like, I don't know, but it's dope and I like it and it's cool.
Uh-huh.
You know, like I just want to appreciate the next thing he does in the same kind of way of like, all right, man, I don't know exactly what the fuck you were talking about there, but it's all good. The movie was dope.
Right. You don't need to be reading articles on IndieWire that are like the 20 things you didn't know that Stanley Kubrick was referencing.
I don't remember that star baby holding up Jeremiah 11:11.
Yeah. And I definitely didn't see him. He wasn't holding up an original VHS copy of Chuds next to a TV.
I mean, I don't know that Hands Across America was like a big enough thing. And I was 10 years old when Hands Across America was happening. Like,
mm-hmm.
I remember looking out, I remember looking at my window and being like, I don't see nobody on my street holding hands. Fuck this thing. Who cares about this? So that was like nothing. It was like so weird that he made like Hands Across America such like an important metaphor
mm-hmm.
for what? I don't know.
I don't know.
I
class, I guess. Class, race, maybe.
That's in there.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if it's explained well enough.
Yeah. I think it's like we said, it just falls victim to trying to do too much.
Yeah.
And trying to have too many things that you're connecting everything to.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Is what it is.
It should have come, like, if you buy the movie like on Blu-ray, it should come with like those thumbtacks and like a map and like the red string, and you can just start making your own connections, and you're never wrong. Mm-hmm. Anyone that you make is always like, yeah, that's what he was saying. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Like, I would be on board with that.
I wish it was more of that kind of a movie. Yeah, that would have been great if it turned out like a David Lynch movie, or like Terrence Malick, where you're like, yeah, I can throw my own interpretation. Sure, that's what that means.
Dude, David Lynch is a fucking perfect example. Like, I don't know what the hell Mulholland Drive is about.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't try and explain it to me as it's happening.
Right.
So I don't feel like I'm wrong when I'm watching it. I just feel like, well, you know, how do I feel when I watch it this time? What can I get from it this time? But the fact that they try and put so many answers into us, it's like, it's almost like telling you, like, no, you're wrong. It's this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, oh, all right. I didn't know we were going in that direction.
Right. Yeah, I love Mulholland Drive because it's the kind of movie that, like, for a very rare movie for me, where the first time I watched it, I immediately wanted to watch it again because I was like, I don't know what is going on, and I don't think I'm going to find out, but I'd love to see it again and give it a whirl.
Yeah,
and I found I watched over quarantine, I watched Twin Peaks, The Return, the Showtime series, for the first time. And I was talking to a buddy of mine about it after I finished, and we were both like, yeah, this is great. But we both also had like different interpretations of stuff that happened. And I think that having something like that be the experience that people have, where like everybody comes away with it with different interpretations of what happened, it just makes for a better conversation piece, instead of coming out and saying, all right, here's this whole universe that we created, but you're only allowed to respond to it in this way.
Yes. And these are the rules within said universe. And it's like, I mean, can you imagine like that one episode of Twin Peaks where it's just like all like in black and white?
Yeah.
And then you're like out in space, and I like that weird like satellite thing. Can you imagine if the next episode after that was explaining all of that?
You'd be like, yeah, I would.
What the fuck is going on right now?
No way. I don't want to see that. Whoa. I love not knowing what the fuck is going on with the guys with the beards who are murdering everybody and saying a weird code into a microphone.
David Lynch is a perfect example. Twin Peaks is a perfect example. Like, I don't need all of the answers, you know, just kind of give me a little bit of a framework so I can kind of understand, like, you know, all right, here's what I think the through line is. Here's what I think the plot is.
Yeah.
You know, and David Lynch is kind of like, I mean, he's known for that. You know, I don't think we go to movies to hear him tell us. To his movies, to hear him tell us what his movie's about. I think he's very much just kind of like, here's what I made.
Mm-hmm.
Take it and go with it. Take it and, you know, run with it.
Yeah. I don't necessarily need my movies to be like a Blue Apron meal where like I get all the ingredients and then also a recipe that I have to follow. I just kind of want to grocery shop sometimes. Let's cook up some, see what comes out.
That's funny. That's great.
Well, Ricky, this has been an absolute pleasure chopping it up with you about us. I do want to, before we get out of here, what would you recommend people watch instead of Us if they want to get a really, like, the experience that you wish you could have had?
Three movies. I actually thought of three movies that this reminds me of that I kind of enjoy a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
Or not kind of, that I enjoy a little bit more, and that I feel like the story is is in the same kind of like world. The 70s version of Invasion of the Body Snatchers, like that, okay. just that idea that us has that we're our own worst enemy, mm-hmm. and we can't be trusted, and the person who you think they are isn't what they seem. Like, I love that. Signs, and like Shyamalan Signs.
Ooh,
I love Nick. I love when movies, when something like global is happening that could be perceived as catastrophic, mm-hmm. but we are getting it from the point of view of like, you know, this small farm in the middle of, you know, nowhere America.
Okay.
And the other one is Prince of Darkness, John Carpenter's Prince of Darkness, where it's a group of people who are trapped in this location. And they don't realize until after the fact that they've released pretty much the apocalypse onto the world. Have you seen Prince of Darkness?
No, never.
Prince of Darkness is pretty solid.
It's not even John Carpenter?
It's a John Carpenter one, yeah. And it's not even like my favorite John Carpenter one. I've grown to appreciate it more as I watched it. But it just has a very like, oh man, this is not going to... In the same way with like, I love that Us ends with like, hey man, this is not going to work out well for people.
Right. Yeah. I mean, I love the last shot of Us for right? sure. It's beautiful.
I really want those two helicopters to start like going down. Mm-hmm. I want it to get even more like, oh man, the end is nigh and it is. Whew.
It would have been great.
It would have been fucking amazing.
We did not get that.
And have you seen Invasion of the Body Snatchers?
I've seen pieces of it. I haven't seen the whole thing, but we watched a lot of scenes from it in school. Obviously, I've seen the Donald Sutherland with the mouth.
Classic. Yeah,
that's another one. I got to watch the whole thing of.
Oh, dude, Invasion of the Body Snatchers is like so great, so great.
I heard wonderful things. It's one of those. I grew up super sheltered, so I missed a lot of stuff. So I'm still like, I'm getting bits and pieces of it here and there, and I try and close those gaps as much as I can. But there's a lot of movies, and like, if there's anything violent that happened, then oh boy, I probably got extremely shunned from seeing that.
Was it because of, did you grow up like religious with your parents?
Yeah, oh, very okay. religious, very Christian in the South. So there's a lot of I wasn't even allowed to see Passion of the Christ when all the other churches were going to go see Passion of the Christ. It's too violent.
I remember my mom was like, I want to go see Passion of the Christ. Should we go see that? And I was like, absolutely not. No, I'm not sitting in that movie with you.
That's fair. That's probably is a good call.
My parents were the opposite. They were like, as long as it's not like nudity, you can pretty much watch whatever you want.
Interesting.
So I got very lucky with if I could just, we could rent whatever we wanted to. I had two older brothers and they would just like rent movies. So I got to see so many things like just through them being older and bringing things into the house.
Nice. Yeah, I did. I was
sweet.
I was the oldest brother. I only have one younger sister, but we both had the same like level on us. And then eventually my parents let me start watching stuff, but it was the opposite where they were okay with like, if there was a little bit of nudity or swearing or whatever in there. Like, I think the first couple of R-rated movies that I was allowed to watch in the house, Blazing Saddles, I think was number one.
Yeah.
And then Crash, I think, was number two.
Wow.
Yeah. That was, not...
Which Crash?
Not the David Cronenberg Crash. That one they definitely would not have been okay with me seeing for likely a bevy of reasons. But... The bad one, the one that everybody, the one that I liked when I was at 15 when it came out and I was like, yeah, this is deep. And then I watch it now and I'm like, oh God,
oh boy,
I've learned so much more about every element of this movie. And what was I thinking? But hey, this is what it is. Ricky, where can the listeners, if they want to argue with you for whatever reason, which is a bad call because you make a lot of very salient points, where can they do that on the internet? Where can they find them on social medias?
I mean, I am on the Twitter, but I am hardly on Twitter now for my own mental health and for having hot takes like I don't like us and not wanting to be attacked by people. But yeah, I'm on Twitter at Ricky Carmona. I'm on Instagram at Ricky Carmona. Yeah, it's always disappointing when we get to the where can everyone find you on social media, because I
because you really don't do it.
Yeah, my social media is more of like, hey, what movie trailers are coming out? What's the movie news that's happening for the day? And then I get the fuck off.
Yeah, I gotta get to that point. That's the next goal.
Yeah. Well, it's a good place to be at. It's a good place to be at. You're gonna love it. You're gonna love it when you get there. Hey, your kids are gonna love it.
Oh yeah. Oh, that'll be great. And then Mystery Science Theater 3000. Check that out. When is the when's the new one coming out? When's the new season dropping?
I believe before the end of the year.
All right. Cool.
Well, yeah, it's all still in the writing process right now. But I believe it'll be either before the end of this year or early next year is what I'm guessing. I might be completely off base on that.
Well, I hope we got a lot of time for people to find out. But keep your eyes and ears peeled, listeners. You can follow me at Diet J on Twitter and Instagram. If you like the show, please tell a friend and consider subscribing on Patreon. You get bonus episodes every week. And that's it. Ricky, thanks again, man.
Absolutely. Hey, shout out to our shirts. The listeners can't see our shirts right now, but you're rocking a dope-ass Run the Jewels shirt. I got my Coming to America Soul Glow shirt on.
Oh, nice.
There we go.
That is great. I'm glad I can finally see that in full. A beautiful shirt.
That's one of my favorite things about Zoom podcasting is always trying to find like the dopest shirt. It was between this and Bruce Leroy from The Last Dragon.
I'm glad you went with, I mean, either one of those would have been great. I can't say I'm glad you went with one or the other, but somebody who understands dope shirts. Appreciate that.
Yeah.
This has been Blockbusting. Go see something good for a change.